are warning us about. How are they going to have to evolve to survive into the future? What is the shop of the future going to look like? If you live in a city with one of these mega shopping centres available to you, are they going to survive in their current form? Are they going to have to evolve? Somewhere like Chadstone in Melbourne grows at the rate of an amoeba. It doubles in size every 15 minutes, it feels like. Is that growth going to be able to continue, or might they, in fact, have to contract? Could it be the return of strip shopping? Maybe there'll be a complimentary foot massage on every entrance or an entrance to every retail opportunity. How are stores going to keep us coming through if costs stay high compared to shopping on the internet? This evening, a retail futurist to talk with us. Morris Misalowski has been good enough to talk with us. So, Morris, good evening to you.
And good evening to you. Wouldn't foot massage be wonderful?
Well, we're talking about, I suppose, and I think you've spoken in the past, about the need to make retail shopping an experience because you're up against places online that are undercutting you on price. So let's talk about what the retail experience of the future might look like.
The retail experience of the future really harks back to the thing that you and I want most of all, and that's a bit of service. We want to be able to walk into a store and we want to be able to have a conversation with somebody. We want that person to be knowledgeable and to be personable as well, and to be able to answer our queries and make good choices for us. And we also want a bit of theatre and a bit of excitement while we're doing it as well. We like our stores to look good. We like them to feel good. We also like them to smell good, strangely enough, because smell is a part of it as well. So really, any good retail outlet is very much like a normal theatre.
Okay, but it sounds like retail is, to some extent, doing that at the moment. Are they doing it well enough to fight off the threat of the internet?
No. And the threat of the internet, I think, is really being overplayed by a lot of people too. What we're talking about lately is something that's relatively new for a lot of people and therefore seems to have fear in it. Retail online at the moment in Australia only accounts for a really small percentage of total retail sales. We're only talking at this stage around the $26 billion mark, somewhere around there. So it's really only about 4 or 5% of our total retail sales, and for many people it's relatively new to them.
So do you accept the arguments being made by the major retailers that it's having an effect on their bottom line?
I think it's having an effect on their bottom line. I think there's a lot of red herrings in the conversation, though. I think that they've pulled out some threads and made those threads to be seen as if they are terribly bad. The reality is that retail shopping online is new for many people. It offers us opportunities that we haven't had before. And like many things that are new, people are finding them. They're making a choice of whether it suits them or not. And they're deciding which way they want to buy. And remember, online purchases are only suitable for a number of goods.
So might we see a change in the retail mix at our local mega mall?
I think so. I think that's what it's going to come down to. That, you know, given the next couple of years, I think this online retailing, offline retailing, is going to become the norm. People will be very comfortable with their decisions, and they'll decide whether they want to walk into a physical store or whether they want to shop online.
Who are going to be the retail winners and who are the retail losers, Michael?
The retail winners are going to be those that can offer us the true experience online, those that make it worthwhile for us to walk in the store. The other thing that we as consumers have never had before is open access. We can now do a retail search quite quickly. We can use our mobile device while we're standing in a store to be able to check prices, to be able to check stock levels somewhere else, to be able to find out if our friends, if our families have bought it and had similar or great experiences about it. So the online experience is really what's going to drive a lot of our conversation, a lot of our research. It's going to inform us before we walk into the store, so that when we walk into the store, we're fully armed with that information. And what we need, therefore, in store is somebody who knows as much as we do, if not more, and can take us on the rest of the journey.
But it sounds like what you're saying is that if we can possibly buy it online, because there'll be economies in the online retailers' operations, if we can buy it online, we will.
Only for some things and only for some people. I have difficulty with this bath and baby water, you know, type analogy where we're going to lose everything to online. It'll suit some people, it won't suit others. And the reality is that the price, I think, will eventually become less of an issue and it'll be more of a service-driven issue.
Is part of the problem that the people who currently enjoy the big shopping centre on the weekend experience also are the people who are technology comfortable and will be also comfortable heading off and buying stuff in other forums?
I think they will, but if we're talking about the big malls, people go there really for the experience of spending some time there. They're looking for more than just the purchase. In fact, the purchase is a very small part of why they go. They go to while away some hours, they go to meet some friends, they have coffee there, they have dinner, they go to the movies, and yes, they'll do some shopping, but it really is that total entity that they're looking for.
If you're in Darwin, you go there because it's air-conditioned and
cool. Absolutely, absolutely. And if you look at the way that malls are growing throughout the globe, they're growing by putting entertainment in there. They're putting ice rinks in there, they're putting movie theatres in there, they're putting roller coasters in there, they're doing all kinds of things to keep people in there. And they're really looking at the demographics. They're looking at the females, the males, the children that are in there, the older people, the younger people, and making sure there's a mix for the whole family to be able to come in and spend time together, and that each of them is satisfied in some way.
I think a giraffe would probably attract me to a major retail operation. That would be an experience I couldn't get online.
It's been done. There are zoos in some of the retail experiences.
Really?
In some of the malls around the world. Yeah, they put petting zoos in, they put larger zoos in. It's certainly been tried before. And you're right, it's a matter of looking at what the audience wants to bring them in.
If you'd like to also put your hand up and suggest to people who are listening in the world of retail that you'd like a giraffe down at your local retail experience, please send us a text this evening, 1-99-22-702. Or if you've got a picture of what the retail experience of the future might look like, giraffe or sans giraffe, give us a call. 1-99-22-702 is the text number, 1-300-800-222. It's the Nightlife. Leon Compton in the chair. And it's good to be with you around Australia. My guest, Morris Misolowski, who is a retail futurist, and we're talking about the shape of things to come. Morris, I apologise. I don't know what's going on. Morris, we were worried about the strip shop, you know, the shopping complex that existed on both sides of a community street a number of years ago, and those ventures took some hits. Is the major retail chain, the big shopping centre, also going to potentially struggle in years to come, do you see?
I think it will, and if we're talking about the Australian experience, we are yet to see a lot of large retailers come into Australia, and we'll see them over the next 18 to 24 months. Costco's been in now for just over a year and a half, and that's the first large, big box, American, global type approach that we've had. But Zara's coming in, for instance, this year. We've seen Gap come in last year. Banana Republic's about to join us. We're told Abercrombie and Finch. Woolworths is bringing out the new big box, their hardware store.
What does that mean? When you say big box, what does that mean?
We're talking about those really huge, cavernous, warehouse-type approaches, if you think about the Costco's, where they have aisles and aisles of stuff that we can buy. And in the Australian experience, that's not been something that we've had a lot of exposure to. What we're getting with those is a whole range of new, for instance, clothing or foods or hardware stuff or white goods for our homes that we haven't been able to get before, and at incredibly low prices. So it's a very different way of shopping.
And if we were talking about the American and how they operate in America, we'd get in our cars and drive 20 kilometres out of town to a paddock, and we would find these big boxes there. Is that going to happen in Australia?
It will, except we won't have to drive that far. So we definitely will see the very, very large footprints of the big boxes, and certainly at the moment there's a lot of work being done with real estate agents to try and find space for these big venue boxes.
So if you've got an enormous block of land somewhere in the suburbs, maybe think about handing it over.
It's definitely time to make hay.
It's time to make hay. Well, indeed. Yes, indeed. I was going to go back to the giraffe, but I think we'll keep moving, Morris.
Is it only a giraffe, or can we go for ostriches or something else?
Well, I was thinking, how good would it be? Because you know how annoying it is carrying bags. If you had something relatively thin-necked, you could pop your bags over its neck and down around its chest. Ostrich, fine. Emu probably would want to be muzzled. And then they could promenade with you on a short leash.
How many bags they could carry?
I've seen a cassowary eat six apples, just one after the other, and you could see all six sliding down its neck. So I would suspect that you'd have to be able to suspend a fair bit of weight.
Well, there's something we could try.
Indeed. And then there'd be a weight limit, of course, because you don't want your cassowary to tip over, and you'd have
this
to ride it again. Morris Misolowski, my guest this evening, he's a retail futurist. So these big boxes, are they going to compete, the idea of these huge chains that will create these endless rows of low-cost stuff within stores, are they going to compete directly with the Westfields or the major shopping centres that we're told the rents are amongst the highest in the world?
And they are. The rents are absolutely the highest in the world. I think we're only just behind New York or something, which is quite incredible. But they are going to compete. They'll definitely take market share away from the Westfields or any of the other chains. But again, in their specific niche. So depending on what they are, But the upside of this also is we've talked about the big box like the Costco's, but the Zara's, the Gap's and those kinds of things actually got quite happily into the Westfields, and the Westfields are now courting them to get them into their large malls. But what they're going to do is they bring a new way of retailing to Australia, or relatively new way of retailing. I don't know whether you've had much had a look at Zara, for instance, which is quite a large
multinational
chain. Zara is a fashion outlet, men's, women's fashion, children. It's quite large in Europe and in the States, and they're about to launch into Australia. We'll see the first store, I think, in the next 4 or 5 months. I think the first store will be in the mall in Melbourne. But what they do is they sell particularly high fashion goods, and they sell them on quick rotation. So they bring stock in for a very short period of time. They look at the fashion that's just about to hit. They'll make up a bunch of that, bring it into store, sell it at a very reasonable price. And then once that's sold out, they won't have that item again. They'll bring in new fashion behind it. So it's a very quick rotation, very moderate pricing on them. And a number of those have that kind of philosophy. So we're finding that, for instance, our retailers that are selling clothing, if they're interested in that segment of the market, are having to look at their stock levels and their pricing levels and their stock turns, how often they bring new stock in and how often they're changing their fashion in store.
Are retailers, old school retailers, bricks and mortar retailers, going to get turn against or have to demand reductions in the sorts of rents that they pay? I mean, if we stay on the rent issue for a moment, is the goose going to stop laying eggs for people who own commercial real estate?
I'm not sure that they're going to be able to demand less rent. It's certainly something they would like to do, but as we've seen already, as you said before, the research shows clearly that we have the largest rent impost in the world almost, and I just don't see any reduction. It hasn't been going down in the last decade or so.
How much of a retailer's turnover gets taken in rent charges in Australia?
I think we're somewhere up around the 15-20%, somewhere around there.
Mm. So $1 in 5, $1 in 6.
Yeah, I think it would be somewhere around there. It's quite considerable.
How does that compare with the international experience?
We're much higher than that. America is down around the 7.6, I think. We're down far less than that. I think they're around, sorry, not 7.6, I think they're around the 50 cents in the $5 mark, somewhere around there.
Okay, so a significant difference
to
your bottom line. Mm. Look, we talk about the different labour costs to have somebody on the shop floor in Australia versus the US or other parts. How is that going to change, do you think, in the future?
I think the whole notion of people in store is going to change over the next few years too. One of the things we need to bring into this equation is it's not just the physical bricks and mortar anymore. It's the fact that you and I as consumers have a great deal of input into what we buy. And, for instance, with our mobile devices that we carry around, our smartphones, we can actually interrogate the retail store and have the retail store talk back to us, so to speak, as we walk into it. And it can begin to guide us through the store, and it'll be able to tell us what's in, what fashion's in, what matches, you know, what kind of things we want, what the prices are, and even do the transaction for us if we want. Now, that kind of technology is not going to do away with people, but it's certainly going to make the retail staff work at a different level, meaning that they will have to have more information at their hand. They will be the person that we go to finalise a transaction or to find out some really detailed information about what we're buying.
So how is this mobile phone interface going to work? Walk us through store with this magical mobile phone retailer interface going on.
So the mobile phone works now with downloaded apps, and an app is a little application. It's an application you download for a specific purpose. And what we're working on at the moment are a whole lot of apps for very many retailers. The app, for instance, will recognise that you've come into the store. Remember, all of this is opt-in, meaning you've chosen to allow it to know you're there. If you haven't, then there's no way it can know anything about you. And when it recognises you into store, and we're talking somewhere between now and the next 18 months or so for these to come into fruition, when it recognises you're into store, it begins to talk to you through your mobile device, either putting things up on your screen or if you have your earphone in, it can actually talk to you and tell you what's in the store based on what it knows you're looking for or what it is it knows you like. And if you think about it, your mobile phone actually knows a lot about you. It knows where you are, where you've travelled to, it knows what you've bought before, it knows your diary, it knows who your friends are through your Facebooks and your Twitters and your LinkedIns. So it actually assembles a lot of information, which at this stage isn't being used together, But these apps will slowly start to pull all of those different bits of information that you carry anyway in that device and put together a profile of who you are and, for instance, what you like to where you like to shop and what you're looking for to buy.
Wow. And then as you approach the checkout, if you still have to approach their checkout, up comes your courtesy emu. And you're off and out the door.
And you're off and you're out. So what it will do in the store, for instance, and this is 18 months plus, but it will actually begin to tell you in the store where the things are that you want. So it'll point you in the direction. It'll tell you whether it's in stock at that store. It'll tell you the pricing of it and also give you the pricing perhaps at the nearest stores or other stores around you so that you'll be able to do your price comparisons.
Maurice Michalowski, my guest this evening, retail futurist on your local ABC right around Australia. It's coming up to 24 minutes away from news. I suppose, Maurice, if all of this is true in the way it can help us engage in bricks and mortar retail, it's also true of how it can improve our online shopping experience. We might engage in that debate in just a tick. Stay with us.
ABC Local Radio is your gateway to all things local. Whether it's in your backyard or across the nation, local radio delivers stories of your community. Discover your local station at abc.net.au/local. You'll find local news, weather, events, sport, recipes and competitions. Download podcasts, read presenters' blogs, explore the stories, people and the news of communities across Australia. abc.net.au/local.
It's the nightlife around Australia. Leon Compton in the chair for the rest of this week, and then Tony, refreshed after, well, nice holiday break. We'll be back doing handsprings through the studio Monday coming. I'm sure lots of you looking forward to that. My guest, Maurice Michalowski, retail futurist this evening. Maurice, I suppose that as these combinations and permutations of what portable apps can do for us in shops change and evolve into the future, the same can also be true of improving the online experience. I think many of us have bought something online that turned out not to be the right size. How is sizing online going to work in the future, do you think?
In a really interesting way. We can do it in a number of ways already, and it's only going to get better. At the moment, if you have a webcam attached to your computer, there are various retailers you can shop at online where through the webcam it takes a picture of you. Again, you've opted in, you've chosen, you've allowed this to happen. And what it does is it puts clothing onto you, puts virtual clothing. So if you think about something like the Wii game, you know, where you use your hands to gesture to make things happen.
Mm.
In some of these, you gesture. So you might see a shirt or you might see a skirt or a pair of pants or something else on the screen. And you actually gesture across the pants and it puts it onto your body. So you can actually see how you look in it. And you can also move your body around, so it'll do a 360 degree for you. And you can model it, see how it looks. And if you want, you can do the online purchase that way.
It's funny, we were talking with Pete Placina on Friday night, our technology or gadget guy, and he was explaining how, from what he's learnt about the big technology super show that's been on in Las Vegas last week, he was saying that the TV and ever larger TVs are going to become the centrepiece of our computerised world, that in fact that'll be the interface in the house where we do what the computer used to do, if you like. It's possible to imagine from what you're saying that we'll be standing in front of the television, you know, some 60-inch behemoth, and having this experience in front of a very large screen.
He's absolutely right. I mean, it's called the third screen. And this third screen, in other words, not the TV, it's not the computer, it's an amalgamation of both, is definitely where we're headed in the home. I would say within a couple of years it will be quite ordinary for most people to do whatever they need in front of a screen, and that can be anything from the computing to the watching TV to downloading movies. And as you've rightly said, they're online retail shopping. So they'll be able to stand in front of this behemoth, they'll be able to try on clothes, they'll be able to send out, you know, pictures of it, which you can do now, of how you're dressed to your Facebook or your LinkedIn or whoever you else want, to your friends out there, and ask them whether they think the clothing is good for you. They'll give you their comments, they'll take some kind of a vote or do whatever you want them to do, and again, make the purchase.
We talk about goods and services. Australia's economy built on the sale of a lot of goods, but it also sounds like for strip shopping to survive and for centres to survive, they will need to increasingly offer services as much as goods.
I think so. I think so. To me, service is the one thing that isn't offered online to the same extent. And in retail generally, if you have a look at any research that's done, usually the number two complaint is customer service. It's definitely where we're going to have to head. The strip shopping centres have definitely done it tough over the last couple of decades, and they've almost been decimated in many places. If you start to look at the strip shopping centres now, they've actually changed their retail mix, which means they have different kinds of stores than the traditional ones that I grew up with.
How have they changed their retail mix?
They tend to be much more of destination stores now. So you find a lot of cafes, you'll find a lot of restaurants in there. There's also service providers moving in, so the accountants, the solicitors, those kinds of people are using that space for offices. And you're finding a more community-oriented centre, which is what strip shopping centres were all about when they first built. But they're doing it tough. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
Mm. Have they staged something of a comeback in recent years, or has the trending been all in one direction?
They've made a comeback, but they've made a comeback because of the change of mix. So if you have a look down most people's strip shopping centres, the cafes tend to do well, the congregating spaces tend to do well. The older type stores, the newsagents, the milk bars, are really struggling still. The post office is doing well, but that's because it has a unique product. So the mixing is changing definitely, and those that can capture community, capture people walking in and keep them for a while, like the cafes, like the restaurants, seem to be doing okay. Also, some of the niche providers, so you might get some fashion designer who's able to take a store, but again, they're often not relying on the strip itself to bring traffic in. They are a destination unto themselves, meaning people will go to them wherever they were.
I suppose another challenge is it would seem that parking or councils are getting increasingly voracious, almost rabid in some cases, in their determination to generate revenue off parking fines. And so the challenge of going and parking near a strip shopping centre, it's fraught with the risk of finding a $150 bill on your windscreen wiper when you get back to the car.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's nothing that can be added to that. I think the councils definitely need to look at it. I have issues, for instance, with Melbourne Council at the moment, who are definitely trying to do their best to stop cars coming into town. And I'd guarantee in writing on paper against my mortgage that within 5 years we'll be reading articles about how the shops in Melbourne, for instance, aren't doing as well as they could be because people aren't physically able to travel in.
I think there's arguments for catching public transport into the centre of major hubs like capital cities, but for smaller strip shopping, for the focuses of different suburbs where you might have equally intrepid parking officers, certainly they might suffer disproportionately.
Well, they may, and again, I'm a total believer in public transport. In fact, I think many of the things that need to be resolved, the answer lies in there. The problem is we don't have it yet. So it's all well and good to ask people to leave their cars at home, but you have to give them the credible alternative to be able to get to that store or that place. And our strip shopping centres just don't offer it, nor do our major cities yet.
On your local ABC, Maurice Misolowski, our retail futurist, talking about what the shop of the future might look like. If you'd like to share your thoughts on the shop of the future, give us a call. 1-300-800-222 is the number, 1-300-800-222. Or you can send us a text, 1-99-22-702. That's 1-99-22-702. This is The Nightlife. Morris, talk to us about the Scandinavian shopping theory.
So what you find in a number of European stores, also beginning to happen a little bit in America, is the chain, or something very different for what you and I are used to. You and I walk into a retail store and we expect it to have stock, and we expect once the transaction's made to be able to walk out with the stock. So we buy the clothing, we buy the bedding or whatever else, we take it on, put it on our ostrich or whatever, and we leave the retail store. What we're finding in Scandinavia and other countries is that their retail experience is to walk into a store, to look at a product on a shelf, and then to go up to the counter and order that product. So what they're doing with ordering is accepting the fact they can't get it now, and it may take them up to 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 2 weeks, depending on how long the delay is, before they can have that at their homes. And for them, that's quite ordinary. That's a usual retail experience. Why that's an interesting phenomenon is that you actually can change the nature of the retail store itself. You talked before about high rents and other issues, other imposts on retailers. One of the big reasons, of course, is that they're paying a lot of rent is because they need a lot of foot space, they need a lot of floor to be able to stock and to be able to merchandise. And merchandising, of course, is putting things out so that you and I can see it.
And then, of course, places to store the auxiliary shirts in the same size that aren't on display necessarily, but to have to be kept out the back.
Absolutely. So if we can reduce that, if we can keep our inventories down as small as possible, then we can go into smaller footprints, smaller stores, reduce our prices. So the cycle, the imposts, the charges can all be reduced as well.
I wonder how people listening this evening would enjoy the experience of, well, being denied instant gratification. You walk into the store, you try it on, but that's the one we've got. You can't take that home, madam. And so you wait for it to be delivered a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks later. How do you think that would go? And so would you be prepared to exchange? Would you be prepared to exchange instant gratification for a fair bit off the bottom line? You can give us a call tonight, 1-300-800-222 on the Nightlife. My guest is a retail futurist, Morris Misolowski. Morris, let's take a call. Hello, Mike in Sydney. Are you there, Mike?
Look, I'm sort of curious as to Morris's thoughts on the impact that is being had by internet retail. I know a number of companies have price-matching situations, which I don't feel that they're exploiting to the length that they can, because obviously it's going to affect their profits. I'm just wondering if there's any big opportunities for the companies to exploit that.
I think there is. Hi, Mike. I think the reality is that we have to accept that the online retail shopping is here, and it's not the enemy. The retailers that I'm working with are starting to put online sales into their normal retail mix. And the possibility or the reality for them is that they could offer traditional bricks and mortar, but they can also offer the clicks. They can also go online, they can sell, they can compete in that marketplace.
Are we going to see prices in Australia come down? Do you think that that Australians are going to be able to shop for less over the next few years as these pressures build?
I'm not convinced we'll be able to shop for less. I don't think our prices will go up as dramatically, though. So I don't think we're going to see a huge downturn in price, but we're certainly not going to see them go up as quickly as we have before.
Good on you, Mike. Good on you, Mike. Thanks for your call this evening to Anne in Bellarive. Hello, Anne.
Oh, hello. I was just going to ask Morris about the fact that I hate the big shopping centres. I really abhor them, and I prefer when we had the little shops along the street where people got to know you, that personal service, remembering who you are. In Hobart, there's a terrific shop that's been around for a while, and it's called Your Mum.
Oh, hang on. No, we're not going to mention the name of that terrific shop that's been around in a while, Anne, but thank you for your call this evening. To Charles in Sydney. Hello, Charles.
Hi. I'm just driving home from work, actually. I find the conversation fascinating. I'm in the insurance industry, specialising in retail shops, and we've noticed especially over the last 4 or 5 years, many, many shop owners unable to afford the rent and the complications also, I'd say, of the GST and all the paperwork that people weren't used to. But they're tending more to take stock now to small market stores on weekends or working from home. And I just noticed that to be a trend.
I think you're right. I mean, some of that mix also, we need to look at the fact that the last couple of years have just been bad across retailing, full stop. Really, online retailing aside, they've just been bad for the reasons that we all know. But I would agree with you. I think that what we need to look at, and certainly every retailer needs to look at, is perhaps a multi-distribution. In other words, maybe we sell some in our store, maybe we take some to a market, maybe we sell some online. It's really a matter of looking at where our customers are and where best can we serve them and be most profitable for us.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think people have to be, as we move forward, and I often speak to customers about this, but they have to be open-minded to new things. It's no longer running a retail shop, it's no longer a hobby, it's a business.
It absolutely is. And as I say to all the people I work with, what you've done in the past has certainly served you well. It's been honourable, it's put food on the table, and it's done very well for you. But it's not necessarily going to do as well for you into the future. Mm. What is it we need to find tomorrow that's going to be just as good for you?
Good on you, Charles. Thanks for your call this evening. Peter in Vincentia says just-in-time selling is how small business particularly survives. Thanks for your text, 1-99-22-702. If you'd like to talk to our retail futurist this evening, it's coming up to 11-2 on the Nightlife around Australia. To Clyde in Wagga Wagga. G'day, Clyde.
G'day. How are you? Wagga revamped our main street, and we've got two big malls. And now your bulky goods, I won't mention names, but your big electrical people and so on, they're moving out of town, the same down in Shepparton, I think it's Woolies or whatever they call it down there. They're out in the industrial areas. I personally, I will not go to a mall because I'll go to a smaller you know, independent retailer, and if I like what's there, well, I'll just buy it. I can't put up with masses of people and food and kids running around, etc. But I think just coming from Wagga, I've heard from people in the business how they're not getting what they used to get, you know, in volume of people.
Morris?
Yeah, and I think that's a lament across time always. We always go back and say that what we, you know, what we had before we don't have now. But Clyde, what you're saying is absolutely right. And what we have in Australia is a beautiful situation where there is strip shopping centres and there are malls and there are all kinds of retail outlets. It's a matter of finding the one that we connect with the best. My only concern is that I would hope that all stores, again, I know I've said this a few times this evening, but I'm a very big believer in great customer service, bringing in clients over and over again, is that stores of every level will offer great customer service.
One of the challenges for small communities, and I've seen this happen in small communities that I've lived in, Morris, is that, you know, the council says, woohoo, a huge hardware chain and a huge shopping centre, supermarket chain are going to come to town. They'll set up 2Ks out of the CBD. They're going to put in a really great retail experience for us, and that's something to celebrate. The problem is it kills the main street of town because around, you know, a news agent goes in just up the road next to the hardware store and a few other things go in around it, and all of a sudden people are shopping there, spending their Saturday afternoon there, rather than promenading down the main drag.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and there's no argument against
that. How do you get that right?
Well, the way to get it right, of course, is, again, consumers can vote with their pockets, so certainly those stores won't come in if there's no evidence that consumers are shopping there. And at the end of the day, we are often our own worst enemy, as difficult as that is to hear, because those shops will simply not open if they believe the customers wouldn't come to them.
Can you have your cake and eat it as well? Can you say, look, you can bring your hardware store, but it's got to go just off the back of the main drag. You'll have to pay more for your site and your construction initially, but we don't want to see our main street die at the same time.
You can certainly try that. I know councils that have tried something similar, but again, it comes down to where the consumer in the end is going to go down and shop.
If it's happened in your town, give us a call. 1300 800 222 is the number. It's the Nightlife. 1300 800 222. Can you tell us the story of the world's largest online shoe retailers?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. This is a company called Zappos, Z-A-P-P-O-S. It's an American-based company. It's been around for about 7 or 8 years. It's a gentleman that started up an online business who believed he could sell shoes online. Now, it just doesn't make sense that you should be able to. I mean, very few of us would actually think that it's something that we can do. But he started up this business where he would sell you a shoe. So you go in online, saw a catalogue, and there were thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of different shoes you could choose from and choose your sizes. But the way he managed to convince people to buy from him was he said that not only will we take the goods back from you, but we'll pay the shipping to take them back, and you've got 365 days. To send them back. So what he's saying to them is, we're going to give you a great price, great service, take them home, we'll deliver them, you'll try them on, if you're not happy with them, send them back at our expense. Now, his returns are somewhere only around the 5 and 6% now, so very few people are sending them back. But what he's done is to set up a very, very sophisticated online experience, and it truly is an experience when you shop with them. If you phone in and talk to a customer service person there, and you've heard me babble about this a lot tonight already, but if you talk to somebody online, they are just magnificent people, let alone salespeople. They actually connect with the customer. If you go online to their website, it's also a joyful experience. It's actually not just clicking on a pair of shoes, but you actually feel, strangely enough, as if you're part of a community. They use a lot of social media, which are the Twitters, the Facebooks, the LinkedIns, to be able to talk to their customers. They do a lot of customer service through Twitter, a lot of talking about what the different shoes are. Now, the upshot of that is that a year ago, Amazon.com bought Zappos for, I think, $1.2 billion and have kept them going ever since. And one of the main reasons they bought them was, of course, because of their turnover, but because they want the culture that Zappos has to be brought across and taught to all the Amazon people.